The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, you've heard that print media are dead or dying and women have equal rights. If both of those notions are true, then why aren't magazines dedicated to women obsolete? News Talk's Sarah Madden reports on the enduring phenomenon of the glossy pages and the history and future of women's magazines.
There we go.
Yeah. Well, we are on a cover shoot with Rosanna Purcell. We're shooting in Lutterstown Castle, which is
Bianca Likes is the editor of VIP magazine.
We love shoot days. They're great crack because you work with really talented teams. You get to be really creative and have loads of fun. And of course, I'm not in front of the camera. Poor Roz has to do all the hard work and do all the smiling, actually, it's not hard. It's actually easy. The shoot days are great days.
Bianca has been in the business for decades, and she's been at the helm of VIP for 20 years.
And I actually did a shoot for VIP back in the day when I was on television. So I was in issue number 3, which was the same issue as Michael Flatley, which was our biggest selling issue of all time. That was Michael Flatley in Malibu, wearing bicycle shorts, standing beside a Ferrari.
So, Fantastic.
Or maybe it was a Lamborghini, I don't know.
VIP is one of Ireland's premier women's magazines.
That VIP actually stands for very Irish people.
Oh!
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
The excitement and energy at today's shoot belies the difficulties that women's magazines have faced in recent years. Some women are still buying them.
Yeah, I actually collect Vogue magazines. I definitely look forward to it. It's always very glamorous.
I bought Vanity Fair, just found it quite interesting.
I'd probably pick up Hello or SVP, because I like Kate Middleton and I used to love Lady Diana. So whatever they were wearing, I'd be inclined to wear something like that.
But many, if not most, are not.
No, I never really did. Maybe like in the hairdressers or something.
The last time I bought one would be Sugar. Or do you remember Kiss? The teen ones. I don't think I've gone and actually bought one as an adult.
So why then are shop shelves still lined with them?
I just like the feel of them.
To me, a treat would be sitting down with a cup of tea or a cup of coffee somewhere with a magazine.
How have they shaped who we are today?
We definitely were kind of reading all the sex advice columns, all that kind of stuff when I was way too young to even know about it, you know?
I have a 1984 catalogue from Family Album. That year, I bought a 5-piece outfit. It was £100 and it was 5-piece and my mother said it was a disgrace.
Do these magazines have a future?
Everything's online that I want to see, so I wouldn't buy a magazine now.
There's something maybe nostalgic about it too, like reading it now in this day and age.
Like I would maybe buy a magazine to put on the coffee table, but yeah, definitely more of an art piece than something you buy monthly.
And if so, what will it be?
We found from 1980 a headline saying, "Why we're still waiting for the male pill." And you know, I'm looking at that like, yeah, why are we still waiting for the male pill? You know what I mean?
Journalist Frankie Kookney has written on sex and relationships in women's magazines from Red to Cosmopolitan. And she's also the co-host of podcast Mag Hags.
Mag Hags is a brand new podcast that celebrates and interrogates the glossy women's magazines of the 70s, 80s and 90s.
Women's magazines came out of a real need. In the sort of golden age of magazine publishing, mainstream newspapers and magazines were just not reporting in any great depth or with any great seriousness on what you might think of, in inverted commas, as women's issues, which obviously, as we all know, are actually human issues, but maybe they don't apply to cisgendered men, so they weren't reported on in the same way. And so they really were fulfilling quite an important need. You know, we didn't have Instagram, we didn't have TikTok, you know, we didn't have all of these sources of information around sexual health and women's health more generally. Like, there were fewer resources for that. And if you came from somewhere where those things were not widely talked about, then you had no real way of knowing. I mean, every time I say, like, we didn't have the internet then, I feel like such an idiot, but we didn't have the internet then. So, yes, they were fulfilling this really, really important role.
Today, archival women's magazines act as a chronicle of women's lives and their changing role in society. While 50s Women's Way may have encouraged homemaking, Ms. heroed second wave feminism in the 70s.
But by the 80s, there's definitely an assumption that everybody's working. And then the 90s is like one step further. And suddenly we've got these features around what it's like to be a really wealthy, successful woman and trying to meet a man, and like, is he emasculated by that? So you know, with it, there's this feature about like all the case studies in it are earning 80 to 100 grand, which by today's standards is around like £200,000 a year is what they're earning. So it's like really kind of professionally successful, but like really wealthy women by the time we get to the 90s. So I think that's been an interesting thing that we've sort of charted. But yeah, I mean, one of the things that these magazines did so well is they had such a strong brand voice. And often you're reading them and you really did feel like part of a gang. Like you really did feel like you were in that family, like, oh, I'm in the New Woman gang, or like I'm in the Cosmo family. And I think that as obviously the internet has evolved and social media and advertisers have kind of taken their money elsewhere, a lot of magazines have felt like they had to water that down a little bit, maybe in order to appeal to just as many people as possible. And what they lost in the process was that kind of really strong identity that made people feel part of a club.
Many magazines are trying to offer new ways to engage in that readership community. Image have launched a series of podcasts and even a business club. For Bianca, it's all about events.
We have the Power of Women Awards coming up now on the 9th of November. We've nominated over 100 women working for different, their own self-made kind of businesses in different categories, about 10 or 12 different categories. And that's a huge event that we host every year. We're having to be many things, not just a print title.
Irish women's magazines have always been a training ground for homegrown talent and a marketplace for Irish brands too.
The fashion industry in Ireland, I mean, the beauty industry in Ireland, the you know, the hairstylist industry in Ireland is absolutely massive. And there is so much talent here. Mm. I mean, to be able to put beautiful Irish brands in the magazine is a joy. We did a page there recently, a double page spread recently on the Irish face. And it was simply cosmetics, foundations, skin ingredients, serums, whatever for your face. And it was just Irish products.
Mm.
I mean, That brings me so much happiness to be able to support all the great talent in this country, because there is so much talent and we are such a wonderfully creative and brilliant nation. So why is it important that the women's magazine industry survives? Well, I need a job. Like, where else do I go? Where do all these guys go?
I absolutely think that women's magazines have a future.
Megan Rowntree is a freelance journalist and former editor of Kiss.ie and Stellar Magazine.
The problem and the kind of magic, I suppose, of the way that Reels and TikToks work currently is that you're not choosing the content you consume. And while that can be really good because it can probably bring you to explore things you didn't know you wanted to explore in terms of food or culture or fashion, it doesn't really give you a lot of control or power. And I think that can be a little bit worrying in terms of how many things that your brain has to consume at one time. I see it in conversations online. I see it in the way that young people talk online. They are finding social media they're getting quite jaded by it. For that reason, I think people want to be able to pick up a magazine and know that it's fashion and women's issues and that it's been curated very carefully by experts and it's not just anyone talking about these really important topics. You know, we've seen the rise, I suppose, of false information or misinformation. So I think that's where the likes of magazines and traditional, you know, news and features are really important. And I think there is going to continue to be a desire for that, because the thing about magazines are they're quite visually stimulating as well. You know, the design is really nice, but also it's the content is very careful and very mindful of its reader. And that's something you can't, I suppose, guarantee with digital. I have no doubt, I think, in a couple of years that the generation that maybe missed out on the teen magazine, the girls that are 15 now, are going to rediscover the idea of magazines and really cherish them and sort of talk about them as if they're a new way to consume media. And I definitely see that happening.
Bianca, Frankie and Megan all agree that despite the challenges of print in a digital world, the rise of influencers and indeed the strides women have made towards representation in mainstream media, women's magazines do have a future. But what will it look like?
First of all, they have to exist with other elements as well. So events and social pages and things like that and digital offerings. But I do see it coming back around in the same way that we've seen with records, we've seen with book talk, for example. There's this kind of desire, I suppose, to get back to something that's not solely focused on digital content. And I think that it's probably going to be 10 years before that comes back around in the way records did. I don't think there's ever going to be a time when magazines don't exist. I just think currently what's working really well is that they are quarterly and they're a little bit more curated and long form, and you might pick it up and read it for a couple of months until the next one comes out. But I think they're going to be around to stay. And I think, in fact, in a couple of years, there's going to be that desire to go back to them in sort of a monthly subscription kind of method.
And that report from Sarah Mapp.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.